no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
Side stories.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Side stories. Yes.
Back in the saddle.
Back in the saddle, man.
Back in the saddle. There it is.
Back in the saddle.
Oh my God, is that Marcus's voice?
I'm back!
Yeah! I tell you what, I'm going to ask you boys this, because I feel like we have talked about this maybe hammered and in private, but I'd love to just put it on blast.
I mean, to be fair, we could have been hammered and in public.
Yes, it's true.
You know.
But I always consider us in a cone of silence. Maybe that's bad.
It is. I've had to chastise you for it multiple times.
Right.
I'm a natural born entertainer, and I was trained to speak from the diaphragm.
Uh-huh.
But I was at a urinal recently, and I went to
Tell me you were going to the bathroom. Because are you going to the bathroom, or are you just at a urinal?
No, I wasn't reviewing urinals by look and taste. I was using it. But I walk into the bathroom. I was a little inebriated, and I'm grieving.
Uh-huh.
I'm sitting there, and
I cannot believe you're using Kevin's death for whatever you're about to use it for right now.
And I'm grieving.
Okay.
I went, and I was like, you know, really pushing out some pee, because I hate the thing where it's like you're going multiple times, whatever. With the, you know, our tubes are getting worse and worse as we get older.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm pushing and pissing, and I just sit there. I mean, like, I had a fart, and I thought about it, being like, well, I mean, I'm in a bathroom. So I just let it go, just standing there with a bunch of people next to me.
Uh-huh.
And I got a look. This guy, like, looked at me, and I was like, this is the bathroom. I feel like if there was a place where I can fart openly, it
sure.
would be here.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, that's right? That's a milestone. Congratulations, Henry. You're officially an old man. You know, one of those people we would go to the bathroom and be like, hope none of those are in here. And then you are the one that no one wants to see at the urinal.
Hope I don't have a farty old fucker sitting right next to me when I go piss today.
Yep, I'd rather sit by Larry Craig in an airport bathroom.
Why? Oh, so that's why that guy who looked like his name was Ralph came and clapped me on the back. Like I was welcome to a club.
You are welcome to it. Welcome to the show, everyone. This is Side Stories. Side Stories. Yeah. I'm Ben Kissel. Marcus Parks is joining us today.
Hello.
We've untethered him from his desk and given his fingers a small break. Let me see. Are they calloused enough? They are calloused. Very good. Continue to work. And of course,
look like a bunch of horrible gray biscottis at the end of your knuckles.
And of course, Henry Zebrowski. So we got a lot of fun stories to get to. I don't know if fun is the right word, but I want to say
philosophically, I think I'm correct, right? You can fart at a urinal.
Yeah, of course you can fart at a urinal. In fact, I think that I kind of like it when people fart at a urinal. It's funny. It kind of gives it a little bit of levity to the whole situation.
If Robert Durst can confess to murdering two people at a urinal, you can fart at the urinal. Don't even worry about it. Or is it Robert Durst?
No, Robert Durst was in Limp Bizkit.
Fred Durst. I get my Dursts all confused. We have a lot of stories that involve murderous women today, just coincidentally. But
and
before
I think
we
that is brave of women. And I still, we've said this before, and we've talked about it when we did Eileen Wuornos, and we've talked about it when we did the female serial killers episode, being like, take the helm. Get out there, start murdering more people if you want an equal place in society.
Well, I don't think that that's the way to take that, but that's okay. All right.
That's the exact wrong lesson.
That's
what I do here. The whole point is that you look at my lessons on life, and then you do the opposite. That's how I talk to you. I'm not going to do this because he listens to the show, but there's a couple of people professionally I reach out to just to see what they say so I can do the opposite.
So you can do the opposite. All right. Well, first of all, we're going to talk a little bit about this docuseries that just debuted on Netflix. It's only 4 episodes. Mm-hmm. Not very long. You can kind of cruise on through it. Henry and I finished it yesterday, and I think Marcus got a couple of eps in. It's Confessions of a Killer, the Ted Bundy tapes.
Ugh.
And I just want to we'll just do a little roundtable here and get everyone's thoughts. Number one.
I got thoughts.
My number one thought is he is George W. Bush. they look the exact same.
Yeah.
Remember
when we did the Bundy episode so many years ago, about way, way, way before we had any fucking clue what we were doing, we ended the episode with the conspiracy that George W. Bush and Ted Bundy are the exact same person. And I think think what they said happened, I think someone said that they switched him back. Oh. Like right before Ted Bundy, like, because there was a Ted Bundy and there was George W. Bush, and Ted Bundy, the real Ted Bundy, was like a good dude.
Oh.
Like, he was fine. Oh. He went to law school and all that. Like, he was a good Republican.
Uh-huh.
But he got mixed up with the Republicans when he was working in politics, and they noticed, like, my God, that guy looks just like a little W. Looks
little
like
W.
Lil Bush. And so when Bush started fucking up, they switched him.
Oh.
Yeah. And so Ted Bundy went down, but George W. Bush went free.
All right. Well, one got elected to the presidency because of Florida, and one got elected to heaven.
Yeah.
Or hell. I'm going to say
they have the same kind of flappy little smile.
Yes.
And one thing that hit me about this documentary is, number one, Netflix, I feel, is doing the very classic thing, which is, I feel like we kind of sprouted out of, like, as a reaction to, of, in some weird way, the series does feel like I'm supposed to root for Bundy. Like,
oh,
they're making
that.
Him sound very, very impressive.
Yep.
Like, he is the most unstoppable monster that ever was. And I do understand that he is obviously a very dangerous person.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about this before. He's probably one of the most dangerous people to ever exist.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, the way they lauded his attention, the way they lauded his ability to evade police and to do his fucking Machiavellian deeds, it was like we're supposed to be horny for it. Like, we're
right.
supposed to watch this thing and be so scared of him, and he cucked every cop that he was around, where they let him take over the whole show. And I feel like Ted Bundy is in another realm right now, jerking off at how fucking scared everyone is because of this documentary.
Loves it. And the thing is about this documentary is that it's really it is an A&E serial killer docu-show wrapped up in a really pretty package. Because
yes.
it's beautiful. Because it's done by
it's
the
well
same,
done.
It's done
yeah.
by the same guys who did the Paradise Lost trilogy.
Right.
I mean, these guys know what the fuck they're doing. They know how to make, and that's why it's somewhat disappointing how much they glorify this guy.
Well,
or how scary, or it really, that's kind of what pisses me off, because it's one of the things we've been fighting against with this show for so long is, you know, making him such a boogeyman. Like, here's the boogeyman. Be afraid of the boogeyman. Keep watching so you can be more afraid of the boogeyman. And it's a beautifully done documentary. Like, all
yes.
the archival footage and all the quick mm-hmm. shots and all the cool. It's really cool. It's very cool.
Well, they tell
it
the
was,
story really well.
They
do a build up really, really well.
And yeah. The build up was great. Like, for example, he was working on the Dan Evans campaign. No idea who the hell this guy is.
No.
But, you know, it was interesting. I didn't realize how well liked he was. He was mm-hmm. doing fairly well within politics.
Oh, that
and,
yeah.
he, and his
He's
what I thought was
it.
Interesting.
He was built for politics, Kissel. And unfortunately, when you're out there in the world mixing with these politicians, half of them got fucking bodies in their basement, and half of them are jerking off just thinking about if they did.
I mean, who knows what's happening to the bathrooms at News Corp? But it's interesting because they interviewed his buddy, and I forget his name now. He's much older now. But it basically was the dude who got Bundy into politics,
mm-hmm.
and it was the guy who he had a beige Volkswagen
that guy.
Beetle. Like, he and but the whole thing seemed interesting to me because that was who Donald or that's who Ted Bundy was emulating. That's
yeah.
who Bundy wanted to be, or at least he was like, that's a person that's respected.
Or
and
like,
so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, or it's like that's what, and that guy loved telling that story so
oh,
much.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, Bundy, he got the idea for the Volkswagen bugs for me.
Well,
for
you,
he got,
you know,
he got they're all like that, though.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
all fucking like that. That sheriff from Tallahassee, that whole rundown of that guy is creaming his jeans trying to talk about how dangerous Ted Bundy was and the incredible work that they did, where they just mopped up everybody else's fucking fuck-ups, essentially, by the end. And they did good cop work by tracking him down. But still,
right.
whatever. One thing I will say I'll take back from also that I take away from this series, too, Ted Bundy is not even attractive enough to be an actor. He's really
oh,
not that
know.
Attractive.
I like, don't know. I mean,
if you look at they do that picture, the courtroom picture, where they do the sketch, where they went and they, when they were looking for him, when he was just Ted, when they were looking for him, and you realize, like, oh, it's true. They all mentioned that he had one eye higher than the other, and one was closer to his nose. And it, when you see the picture, he looked just like that police sketch. And you're like, oh, wow, I could never see him the same ever again. That focus up on his eyes both being fucking uneven, he looks all fucked up.
But, you know, I will say he does have a chameleon-like face.
Exactly.
And that's why he was able to just turn his hair ever so different. And everyone's like, who is that new guy in town? And it'd be like, it's the same guy from yesterday.
Well, that was the big thing with Ted Bundy, is that all of the sketches looked wildly different from each other. You know, people that saw him on the same day even gave different sketches of Ted Bundy.
Right.
And even when, but that's the thing, is that when the sketches started coming out after the girls disappeared from Lake Sammamish.
Sammamish.
Lake Sammamish. When he kidnapped and killed two women in one day, his friends were looking at the sketch in the paper, and that's the thing, is that like it said, this guy's named Ted,
right?
Here's his sketch. He drives a Volkswagen Bug, and all of his friends were like, that looks like you, Ted.
Right, and you have a Volkswagen.
And you have a Volkswagen Bug. That looks like you. But they
isn't it funny? Isn't that funny?
But they were so overtaken by who Bundy was. Because, I mean, really it is. He was horrifically charming. Like, he was able to fool people, like, over and over and over and over.
I mean, he was able
again
to convince people he had a problem with a yacht on dry land.
Yeah, but the worst part of the docuseries, and you know, and I didn't get to see the whole thing, but Annie, who is my research assistant for the book, she sent me an article last night that said that they don't talk about any of the murders in any detail whatsoever.
They
jump around the timeline quite a bit.
Yeah, they do.
But they mostly stress, to be honest, how good he was at serial killing. That is like a thing about the documentary that I understand, but I don't particularly enjoy, because they are very impressed by his process. But I want to again punch when the beginning of that whole docuseries shows that, I mean, the reason why he became a serial killer, like we learned with Mark Twitchell, like we've been talking about with fucking Dr. Mangala, is that it comes from very intense mediocrity.
Oh, yeah.
It comes from somebody who literally cannot do. He could not make friends. He couldn't fit into society. He was sort of good in politics, which does, I guess, take somebody who is a hollow shell of a human being.
Yeah, and but it takes a lot of mediocrity.
Yes.
That's not a bad thing to have.
Yeah. To be a Republican in the late 70s, early 80s definitely takes a fair amount of media, or at least early to mid 70s takes a lot of mediocrity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he did get into law school, but it was a small school. He didn't get any of the esteem that he wanted. He had this version of himself that was just grander than who he was. He was really insecure about not having money, and he was he's lazy. And that's why he wanted to leapfrog hard work by marrying really wealthy women, or he was attracted to wealthy women and classy women. But then he would be like, but I can't date them because I don't have enough money. So that it was this really vicious cycle of wanting to be in a class that he wasn't in, but didn't have the work ethic to then get there the right way.
And speaking of, marrying wealthy, and speaking of the woman that was supposedly the victim prototype, who was known for years as Stephanie Brooks, I didn't think anyone actually knew who she was before this. Like, it seems like this documentary blew the lid off of this woman's fucking life and showed her name, showed her picture, you know, because Stephanie Brooks was the name that Anne Ruhl used in The Stranger Beside Me. And, you know, as far as I know, people use the name Stephanie Brooks for years and years and years because this woman there's no reason for her to be involved in this. And
no, she's a victim
to her, Ted Bundy's a bad ex-boyfriend, you know?
Yeah,
and
of course.
There's no reason. And it seemed classless to me to just say, like, here's this woman's first and last name, and here's a picture of her, and here's all the things that she did in college. And it seemed really sleazy.
It is the running gag that they also just did with the Fire Festival documentary, where they essentially paid Fuck Jerry again to make money on the disaster that they helped produce, that they then basically double made money by then producing the gotcha documentary about the people about the crimes that they were also technically involved in, even within the fringe. The Netflix at this point is like trying desperately to scoop. They want to scoop.
They
want to do that kind of shit, which is, I don't know how to feel about it, because I understand the want. I understand you want to bring new information to the table. We've been reading about Ted Bundy for years, so you want to add, like, new things. But in the end, it's like, what are we losing also in that?
It tells us nothing, and not only that.
No, it was interesting, though. You know, when you think about the escapes, the double escapes, that was fascinating, seeing the jail cell where he
absolutely
goes out of.
Yeah.
And when he traveled all across the country country, literally one coast to the other. I mean, it was fascinating to remember that you could do that, number one. And number two, when he, like, I forgot that he went to Michigan to watch the Michigan football team
the
play.
Rose Bowl.
He got into a fight at the bar.
Yeah.
Because he was such an asshole that he almost got into a fist fight at a bar.
Yeah. Well, he was also at that time in the middle of a manic episode.
Oh, yeah.
After he, because that story, his escape, like, because I don't know exactly how much they tell because I didn't get that far into the documentary series, but that story is amazing where he breaks out of prison because he cut a hole in the ceiling of his jail cell. He lost weight. He purposely started sleeping later up until like 11 o'clock. So the jailers got trained to not bring him his food until about 11 o'clock every day. So what he would do every night is he would go in and out of the hole every single night and explore the jail to see what the best route of escape was. And then once he finally got out, he started hitchhiking. He got a ride from a guy. He told the guy, hey, my wife is going into labor in another city. I need to get to the airport right now. And how he got the airport tickets is because since he was working as his own legal defense, he had a credit card that he could use to make long-distance phone calls.
Fucking amazing.
So he used the credit card to get a plane ticket to Chicago. And by the time anyone knew that Ted Bundy was gone, he'd been gone for 17 hours and he was 1,000 miles away.
I didn't realize that the guards, it was the jailer. He had an apartment right above the cell.
Yeah.
There were a couple of strategic mistakes, I would say, in the planning of that prison.
Yeah, he dropped down to the jailer's closet because he started crawling up there and he could hear them having dinner below him.
Crazy. It is interesting because I don't want to blow up and say that he was this devious mastermind, but he put a lot of work in. There was a lot of blind eyes turned towards him, and I think it had quite to do with his looks, and it's a part of the reason why he was allowed to do what he did, because he just looks like a normal kind of unassuming man. Like, he's vaguely good looking and he just kind of has this kind of affable, like, I hate the smug laugh though that they hit
into
at all time.
Well, and you really see that.
Natalie actually put this. We were watching together, and like I don't, you know, like it's hard because it's a hard thing to bring up, but it literally is the full extent of white privilege. Where, like, to be honest, you're watching the story, being like, you guys aren't gonna wail on him, really?
Oh my god! Well, even.
You really could have he could have used. It's like if there's any time there's going to be a little bit of police abuse, a little bit of maybe some of excessive force, I feel like maybe we could have grabbed him and fucking like beat the shit out of him a couple of times, especially after he was wanted for a bunch of different murders and all that kind of shit. I understand. But it's like once you really realize the extent of his crimes, maybe it'd be good for somebody to kind of give him a fucking whack on the side of the head. And maybe he was a little disoriented. It'll be difficult for him to be constantly planning how to escape.
Absolutely. They could have done a little Polish family reunion right there. Of course, they could have had some violence. There's no denying that. And it's interesting to that point when he got arrested the first time. It was the first time, maybe the second time, when he sped away from the officer. Mm-hmm. The officer chases him down, and the officer talks about he got into a fight with the guy. He tried to go for his gun. The officer hit him in the head with his revolver. Mm-hmm. Just old school. Now it is three in the chest.
Fucking ventilated.
Ventilate him. That's what they should have fucking done. I can't believe how much shit he got away with.
No,
he just got away. I guess that's a part of it. He just got away with so much shit. And it was like they did that big. They showed it in the third episode where the sheriff of Tallahassee wanted to publicly indict him. And so they put him out. No handcuffs on.
No handcuffs.
In a press pool. Hanging out. They read it to him on live television, and then it's like you just gave him a platform. He is loving this shit. You guys just kept giving him this stuff. You gave him all this ammo to run with, and then you gave him a recorder, and that's where he starts to remind me of BTK because of how much he loves the sound of his own voice.
He absolutely does. I did not. The new information that I got from this, though, and I'm not sure if we covered this. Obviously that was years and years ago when we spoke about this man. But when he cross-examined the man who went into the sorority house first in Tallahassee.
Yeah.
The great detail that he made him go into about how the bodies were placed, all the bite marks, the physicality of it, was so eerie.
Well, that's the interesting thing about that incident is that Ted Bundy's trial was one of the very first televised trials in American history. And everyone across the country watched the Ted Bundy trial. And because he was charming and because he was kind of good looking.
TV friendly.
The American TV, because he was very TV friendly, and he also dressed TV friendly. Like when he'd wear those fucking like Seattle Supersonics sweaters,
he wore a belly shirt in one of the pictures.
Yeah. And because he was so TV friendly, America was kind of split on this guy. Like Ted Bundy was like a little popular, and they're like, well, I don't know, like wow, yeah. And really, like at the end of the day, the science, the tooth bite science is kind of junk science. Like it's not
right.
It's not great. It's not really that good a science. So people were a little apprehensive, like, oh well, maybe he didn't do it. Maybe this is just bad luck.
Right.
But after that cross examination, after it was obvious that he took this guy, after it was obvious that he took this police officer up to ask him all these questions, because he made him do all these details, made him talk
over
about all
over.
This over and over and over again, and then asked no follow-up questions.
Right.
And then just sat down, because it was obvious he just wanted to hear it.
But like, yeah, no, it was he had managed to flip the whole thing to be an expression of his horrific crimes,
yep.
And lay them out in front of everyone, and everyone gets to witness it, and he's totally in charge. He's this Machiavellian fucking devious piece of shit. Don't you see how evil my deeds are? All it is making him harder and harder.
Yep, and he really thought he was going to get away with it. I firmly believe that. This story also had, in my opinion, other than Ted Bundy, who is obviously the worst character in the story, Carol Ann Boone, that was the woman he got engaged to under oath when she
Boone.
Was testifying.
Yeah.
She was just driving me insane. They ended up having a child because the corrections officer turned his back and let him have sex.
I thought they snuck cum out.
No, it happened there.
They had conjugal visits.
Wow, he could actually do it. They actually could fuck. I didn't get to the very end.
They actually did it. So they had a kid.
I didn't know that. Ugh.
Yeah, dude. It was they had family pictures. She had a son from another relationship. But she was. So you had the first. So we had two escapes. We had mass murder. So we're beautiful girls being killed. Now we have a fucking dude, Machiavellian like Bundy, an engagement. And then of course it ends with a televised execution. It is the perfect television true crime show.
I mean, this is a Ted Bundy. It is a amazing story. Like,
it is,
but
the way that they framed it too. I mean, if you're, this is before like everyone was a reality show producer in their own.
I mean, but like, it just shows that it's like a strain of humankind.
Right.
I don't want to mention how many people this reminds me of currently that are also in charge right now. But a part of like the people that understand intrinsically how to get eyeballs and cameras on them
and frame.
And he is just one of those guys where it's like if he had gotten positive validation in other realms, he technically would have probably also killed people, but would have been a very successful TV producer.
I mean, it is possible. I mean, even the one thing that bothered me about this was, again, they didn't focus enough on the victims' families and what the victims went through. They did show what the judge said, however, to Bundy, and as we did talk about this, I didn't quite realize how much the judge truly loved Ted Bundy.
The judge was just absolutely smitten with Bundy.
And when you talk about privilege, as Henry mentioned, without a doubt, like the fact that judge looked at him and was like, you would have made a great lawyer. It's a shame we didn't get to work together. He was more concerned with the waste of Ted Bundy's potential than the
all
death
like
of 36
this.
People.
They're all treating him with kid gloves. They're all they kept calling him special. And it's just like, go fuck yourself. He's not special.
No.
He did the easiest thing in the world is to give in to those dark impulses. That's the easiest shit to do. And you all just couldn't get over yourselves to talk about how evil he was.
But then it was fascinating because at the end when they show all the students that were there in Tallahassee when they finally ended up executing him, that made my skin crawl a little bit too.
What with
just the fry Ted fry like just the spectacle that it became.
I will admit I do own a Burn Bundy Burn T-shirt.
No, I wanted one as soon as I saw it. I literally as soon as I saw the guy take it out of his trunk, Burn Bundy Burn. I was like, I wish he had it in black.
Yeah.
Why is that shirt white? I don't wear white shirts.
Carolina got me a Burn Bundy Burn T-shirt for for my birthday this year, because I mentioned that I wanted one back when I was writing the Bundy chapter in like June.
That's so funny.
She's very, very sweet. But well, the thing about this information, too, is that you know, they bill it as, you know, the Bundy tapes.
Yes.
This is all new information. This is based on, like, the book was written in 1989. It's called The Only Living Witness. Like, these, and the guys, that based on these tapes, like, this is nothing new. Maybe these tapes have never been heard before, but it's, on the other end, you know, it's Bundy saying shit that doesn't really matter. You know,
it's all just blah, 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 blah.
It gives you no new insight into who Bundy is. It's, I mean, it is a cash grab. It is a cash grab that is meant to. It's piggybacking on the Zac Efron movie,
of course,
looks weird as well.
Yeah, they're making it kind of like it's. It seems like it's kind of like a comedy. It's kind of like a higher energy kind of thing where they're trying to kind of give it some pizzazz.
See, that's
some
what
to it.
That.
What someone who saw it said that it is like a '70s rock biopic, like with needle drops and like fast cuts and shit like that.
Yeah, that is
And I don't know. And they'd better, because that's the thing about both this documentary series and probably the movie as well. I don't know, but. If they don't go into the actual murder,
right?
Like, because there's a reason. Like, we don't go into the actual murders and the details of the actual murders, just as, you know, morbid like murder tourists. Like, we're doing it to show you what these guys actually do.
Right.
This is what they do. This is what they did. This is who this piece of shit is. This is who these people are. Like, it's showing people what the fuck happened, what the consequences of these things are, and how fucking awful. They're not cool. They're not sexy, because that's the thing. You watch Ted Bundy this entire – you watch that documentary series, and they don't go into him sawing off a head and throwing it into his girlfriend's fucking furnace – or throwing it in his girlfriend's fireplace. Or you don't talk about him putting makeup on severed heads, or having sex or having sex with a corpse over a series of like 4 days, or possibly keeping a woman alive and raping her over and over and over again over a period of days out in the woods.
Right.
Or you know, the two girls after Sammamish, those two girls, how he took them both to a farmhouse and he raped and killed one while he made the other one watch. You don't go through any of that shit, if you don't talk about any of that shit, then Ted Bundy's a sexy figure.
We can't make him like a rock and roll god that way, because
it's just murder. Because, it's just murder. Murder's fine. Murder's whatever. You know, it's a cult figure thing. He becomes fucking Billy the Kid or something.
Yes, it's exactly what it is. It's a lovable outlaw all of a sudden.
Right.
And all of a sudden you're in the middle of this being like, are you trying to, like, watching this series being like, are you trying to tell me to root for this motherfucker? Like, I'm supposed to act like all of this, like he's Robin Hood or some bullshit? Mm-hmm. But I'm like, no, man, he was an incredibly dangerous person that just happened to be flawed enough as a human being to activate that part of his mind and make it put it on the world.
And of course, perfect timing, just technology wasn't there yet. And he worked with the police departments previously. He knew the behind the scenes work. He knew exactly how to get away with it for a long time. But absolutely, that was one of the things that they definitely should have put in. They did tell the story about the woman that he kidnapped who was able to get away, which is horrific, obviously was going to get a lot worse.
But
you know, they don't really go into that. They mentioned the necrophilia a little bit at the end.
A little bit at the end, and it's such a huge part of it. And the article, you know, the article that I mentioned earlier that, you know, talks about all this stuff, it's by Katie Dowd, published at San Francisco Gay. It's called Netflix's Ted Bundy Documentary is Almost Everything That's Wrong with the True Crime Genre.
All
right. It's a good read. I'd recommend it. Yeah, Annie sent it over to me. But it's a really good read. And the sorts of crimes that these people do, the actual details, it's not about being morbid. It's about showing what these people actually fucking are. I mean, I doubt there would be as many girls talking about how nice Richard Ramirez's hair looks if they knew about him carving out the eyes and putting them in a jewelry box and taking them back to the Cecil Hotel and laughing later.
What I think would really turn him off is the halitosis of Ramirez.
Yes, because that's a thing that's never actually sexy. It's never, no one actually misconstrues that. But again, you know, this is, people are going to do what they're going to do. And people handle these news the way that they handle these news.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't really understand. I mean, we were looking at pictures of what the bitch from Buchenwald. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Ilse Kirk.
And I'm not into her. And that's technically like my type. Yeah. Like tall, busty. You know what I mean? And I'm not into her.
Oh yeah, Ilsa Koch. That was Ed Gein's lady right there.
Oh my goodness! Yeah.
But for I feel more like on if that relationship, just wait for the book.
But honestly, I can't look. Because normally, in a man's mind, way, I could maybe just separate the boobies from the thing, but I can't with her. So I think that makes me better. And then also, good. I mean, even with Casey Anthony, I would have to be very hard pressed to date her.
Very hard pressed
to date her.
Wow.
What about
to date
just,
her?
What about just a general like
just a going, meet and greet?
Just say meet and greet. Say like
hey, hello.
We're in a parallel universe where you and Natalie never met, and you know that you're on the, this is 3 years single, Henry, and you're down in St. Petersburg visiting your parents, and in walks Casey Anthony.
Depends on what kind of Tuesday it is, and also depends if there is a goddamn is there some guy just playing acoustic guitar or some hot slick like. Some fucking early Santana. Maybe
my friend,
some...
it is St. Petersburg on a Tuesday. Every bar has got a guy with an acoustic guitar.
Absolutely.
That's what I'm saying.
Yes. Yes.
I'm just glad I didn't bump into O.J. Simpson because he was at the same fucking bar his bar is the same hotel that we stayed at for our wedding. Which wouldn't that have been fun?
Well, honestly, you might bump into O.J. at some point. He's out and about or about to go out. Yeah. He's always having fun. All right. That's basically a little synopsis on the Netflix series Ted Bundy. Yeah, remember the crimes. I would say, you know, watch the docuseries. You will pick up some stuff that's interesting. It was interesting how he could only shed light on his crimes in the third person. You know, but it's all this
all of that stuff is it's interesting, but it's also in a book that came out 30 years ago. Yeah. But at the if you're a visual learner like me, I like watching it, so obviously I would still recommend the docuseries. It's pretty thorough. It's just remember what you're, for me, I say it to myself, I'm like, remember what you're watching, why you're watching it. I'm watching it, essentially, I'm watching it for this show, and I'm watching it because of my general interest in true crime. But then once it slides into this area of like treating him like he's Batman, then I'm checked out.
No, I know. It turned into the story of a failed lawyer and what he could have been.
Well, also, hey man, Bruce MacArthur, he fucking he pleaded guilty 8 counts this morning. So he's he's going to the Canadian Slammer, which we know how strict that is.
Oh yeah. No poutine on Mondays.
All right, but on Mondays sometimes.
Sometimes
if you're good, we'll give it to you. But normally no poutine on Mondays. Poutine will be served regularly and hot. From Tuesday through Sunday.
Oh, that's nice. Bruce MacArthur, of course, he killed 8 people in Canada, mostly or all gay men. So it's he has pleaded guilty and he is sentenced.
I didn't follow this story. Wasn't it mostly Middle Eastern gay men?
Yes.
A chunk of them, yes. And it was a part of it is the Les Dead scenario. Because part of it is they're saying that he wasn't picked up because he looked like a very nice grandpa. And they didn't realize that he was in full into the S&M scene. And they didn't know how to gauge all that, and then he just hid body parts and planters all over Toronto.
Yeah, it's, he was a landscaper.
Very creative boy. Very creative.
So he
put body parts in the scapes that he or the land
commercial landscaping, I believe.
Ooh.
Yes. So
yeah,
it was.
Buddy. No, we'll be covering him one day.
Yeah.
Yes. Each of the first degree murder charges carry an automatic life sentence, meaning they must be, I guess, running concurrently because he's going to be eligible for parole when he is 91 years old. So it doesn't look like he'll be getting out. Yes, and mostly Middle Eastern men. So there you go. So anyway, that's a good story. He is away as he should be. He's 67 years old now. All right. Well, as we mentioned earlier, today, I guess it's, I don't know why the news stories this week, a lot of lady killers out there.
There are.
So this one comes to us. The title of it is Why a Washington Woman's Boyfriend Turned Her In for Murder After a Concerning Facebook Message. After learning his girlfriend had been accused of murdering his ex's mother, a Washington state man called 911. Ashley Horning is her name. And honestly, I'm not going to regress on what big steps Henry made regarding not being attracted to horrible people, but
I'm
she
looking
is
at her.
Quite, she's
she
quite
attractive. She kind of looks like Snooki.
More attractive than that.
I forgot about your thing for Snooki.
I met Snooki.
I remember. Yeah, we used to talk about back on the round table all the time.
Well, of course. I met Snooki. She had an entourage about 18 people deep. Uh-huh. Wasn't able to get that close. She's very tiny.
Yeah.
She wrote a book about motherhood. So we're doing fine. Ashley Horning, she is 25 years old. She's being held on $1 million bond after Spokane police charged her with second-degree murder of Christina Powell, the 48-year-old mother of her ex and the grandmother of her young daughter. Zachary Gardner told, this is local news, KXLY.
Oh, yeah, Clixie.
Clixie News. He and Horning had been dating for several weeks when he discovered she was a murder suspect, which I believe is the Michael Myers. Isn't that So I Married an Axe Murderer? Isn't that exactly that premise from that movie?
I will tell you, he had the reaction that I could totally see from this dude. It was like, she's a good woman. I'll tell you that for sure. Obviously, it's hard for some people to see right now.
That's what I'm saying. She was attractive enough for him to be like, well, she's not all bad.
So is this cool? She's like, she let me play video games and shit. We fucking chill. Like, a lot of chicks don't like chill. So she's like super chill. So it's like, guess you gotta murder somebody because if it gets out of your system, you won't fucking hassle me. Fucking cool.
She kind of looks like Casey Anthony in a way.
Well, this is like the Casey Anthony story, because remember the guy that everyone said was Anthony's boyfriend, Tony Lazzaro,
that's his name? Mm-hmm.
That everyone was like, Casey Anthony's boyfriend is like, no, they were just fucking getting high and playing Smash Brothers for like 2 weeks before all of this shit went down.
This woman, Horning, was doing a little bit more than that. She fatally shot Powell on Thursday morning before going on the run from the police. Court documents obtained by People magazine confirm Gardner received a Facebook message from Horning not long after Powell's killing. In it, she expressed suicidal thoughts. Gardner said he went to meet with Horning, who was sitting on the bench about a mile from the crime scene. This is what he says. He says, long story short,
I picked her up because I thought something was off.
It was then that he said that Horning showed him a news story about how police were searching for her. Gardner says,
it was a stressful situation. And I said, we're going to turn you in. She agreed.
And then Gardner told the station police where she was. And so he said Horning was anxious, depressed, and wanted custody of her two children who were staying with their fathers.
You're a new bro on the scene, right? You're getting used to it. It's like, maybe I could, like, date, I guess. I guess she's cool, whatever. She's chill. And then all of a sudden, you're like, she's maybe a murder suspect, and the guy's just in the middle of being like, well, you know, fucking shit, dude. My fucking grandpa, like, watched a movie on Vietnam and fucking told me about it. So people fucking get killed, dude. I fucking don't know. Like, a bro's powerful shield against trauma is I'm very jealous of.
It really is.
I just love his life. Knowing her personally, that wasn't something she would normally be capable of or want to do.
No.
It's like, you've been dating her for 2 fucking weeks, dude.
Yep. She wanted custody of her kids from her fathers. Nothing wrong with having kids out there, but my goodness gracious. So apparently, the gun that she used to kill this poor woman, she tossed it into the Spokane River, and it's unclear as of Monday if Horning had entered a plea of the charges she faces or if she has retained a lawyer who could comment on her behalf.
So she shot her ex's mother.
Yes, and the grandmother of her child. So it was one. So it's, you know, there's some close.
There's a lot to unpack here whatever their relationship is.
It seems like what it is that the grandmother was probably taking care of the child. This woman sounds absolutely fucking insane. The grandmother was trying to have the child's best interest.
And you don't tell me how to raise my baby. You don't tell me how to raise my fucking baby.
And she probably told her, stay the fuck away from here. You're not allowed in this house anymore. This woman loses her fucking mind and shoots her in the face.
So apparently Horning, this is, she was talking from prison. She says she has no memory of the alleged murder, and she only realized was in trouble. She only realized when she was in trouble. So, strange how you black that out.
Yeah.
Huh. Flames, she, flame shooting up the side of my face and then nothing. Like, you can see my feeling.
I love it.
I just simply can't. Okay, it's Tuesday. What am I doing? I'm chilling with Brad because he wants to be chilled. We're chilling. And I'm good at chilling. I'm super chill. He knows that. I'm chill. And then it's just Thursday.
Madeline Kahn, one of the greatest of all time. She realized she was in trouble when she saw social media postings about her wanted status. So
that is great.
She's got some disconnect going on, and it's just sad when, like, that. Is that where we are now in society, where you don't know you're a murderer until you see it on Twitter?
It's a social media posting. So does that mean that her friends were posting, "Hey, Ashley, where are you? I think you're wanted for murder." Or does she follow the local police department on Twitter?
I have no idea.
I imagine she got a Facebook message being like, "I think you're guilty of murder." And she's like, "No way." What?
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
This other story. College student stabbed her best friend 30 to 40 times. Now, I'm not going to say that this is indicative of sometimes the fraught relationships that women have with other women, but it seems intense because there doesn't seem a lot that made this pop off. I don't know what happened.
Well, all right. So this is I don't know if fun is the right adjective to use, but it's interesting.
A Virginia college student murdered her quote unquote, because I'm going to put this in quotes.
Yeah, they put
friend and roommate by stabbing her as many as 40 times with a butcher knife in the off-campus apartment they shared, police said. Lisa Cutting, interesting, 21, from Jeffersonton, Virginia. It sounds like you're making up a name.
It's called Jefferton.
Jefferton?
Jefferson.
On my article.
No, it literally is. It really is like, yeah, my name is Robert from
Jeffersonton, Virginiolia. She's charged with second-degree murder, which I don't even understand, for the death of fellow Radford University student Alexa Cannon, formerly of Roanoke, according to a press release from the Radford City Police Department. Cutting was being held in a local jail on no bond. Police responded to a 911 call around 7:45 Thursday. During the call, a police dispatcher said she heard someone shouting and referencing a knife. When officials arrived at the off-campus apartment where the woman resided, they saw Cutting covered in blood. And Cutting put her arms behind her head and said, "Arrest me," the search warrant said. "I killed her," Cutting said, after the police asked her what was going on.
Cannon
was pronounced dead at the scene.
If you're an officer, hey, what's going on?
What's going on?
Arrest me. I killed her. What's going on?
You guys been making some kind of strawberry sundaes over here. I know how you girls like to spend your Thursday evenings making sundaes and stuff.
That is how, like, just utterly shocked the mind, I'm assuming, of a male police officer is. She's like, she's covered in blood. She says, "Arrest me. I killed her." Did you guys baking? What's happening here?
What's going on here? Police did not reveal a motive for the killing. Posts on Cannon's social media pages indicate that the girls had a close relationship. "I met this girl 2 years ago online, and somehow we ended up living across from each other for a year. And this summer, she was equivalent to my mom in Cancun. And unimaginably, she still puts up with me. And now we're living together next year. Love you more, Lou. And everyone pray that we don't kill each other this year." Cannon said on Instagram.
Okay, so that is the victim. That is a victim. Miss Cannon there. That's what she said on Instagram. "Let's pray we don't kill each other this year." A post on Cannon's Facebook page from July read,
"So incredibly proud of my best friend, Louisa Cutting, for becoming Latino Student Alliance's president. I know you're going to be amazing with everything you do. Love you more. Love you so much," Cutting wrote. But I also thought it was really weird that all of the knife emojis at the end of it was very strange, very out of character for her.
So it looks like Cutting is doing fairly well here in school, but maybe this has something to do with a mental break. Apparently Cutting is on interim suspension at the university. That's according to Caitlin Skaggs at Radford University's Associate Vice President for University Relations. This is according to the university statement from the student, Brian Hempfel. He said, "This is a tragic moment for our campus community and the Radford family. During this difficult time, we ask that you provide support to your fellow Highlanders." So I guess...
But there can be only one!
I know! That is a horrible name.
I feel like you can feel the tension, the murderous tension, when you see back and forth social media posts of two young women saying, like, love you more.
Right.
It does kind of feel like if you think that you love me more, I'll fucking kill you. Like,
right.
You can kind of feel that energy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. The statement from the university goes on, the days and months to come will also be difficult as we extend our deepest sympathies as well as our thoughts and prayers to the family and loved ones of
stabbing
our
somebody
student.
30 times
yeah.
takes an incredible amount of rage.
I mean, that's the low end.
That is insane. That's insane. Like, I wonder what, because especially in the middle of doing it, like, how do you, like, I'm not going to say I understand, but I can kind of see the impulse, like, stab or hurt somebody, do some kind of thing out of a crazy fucking impulse. You're an emotional basket case, and you're kind of on the edge, and then something happens, you get in a fight, and come bullshit like that. But how is 30 stab wounds, second degree murder? Because it sounds like she really wants to do it. It's not like accidentally knocking somebody over a railing or some shit or some kind of horrible accident.
Yeah, I'm not sure. 30 to 40, I mean,
there must be some sort of mitigating factors going on here. I mean, with the sort, well, with something like that, like, I think crimes of passion, things like that, is second degree murder. Like, if it's like a pop off type of thing, like in the moment, in the heat of the moment, I believe that's sometimes second degree murder. I mean, depending. First degree murder is like that fully premeditated. I'm going to kill you, planning it out, all that sort of
shit. It might be easier to prove as well.
Yeah.
Perhaps death penalty would come with first. Who knows? I'm not quite sure.
Capital murder and all that type of shit. But with as far as stabbing someone like that goes, like as many times from what we've read from people who have done things like that is that they keep stabbing until the rage runs out. And that's why they keep stabbing, is that it's not they don't keep stabbing because, like, I want to kill them. They keep stabbing because the rage that they're feeling is still there, and they don't stop stabbing until the rage has abated. And then that's when you get that feeling of, oh God, what have I done?
Well, that's your Bundy, right? When he went in, he had the sorority house, went freaking totally bonkers, and then he killed two more.
That's a different psychology, though, because that kind of psychology is that's serial killer psychology. I mean, it is a berserker mode, but it comes from a different place. Like, it comes from that kind of rage comes from a different place. It's more of a rage at, you know, that what is it? What did he call it? The entity.
The entity.
The entity. He wasn't the only one who had an entity. I wanted to mention this. John Wayne Gacy also had an entity. Remember the name of his entity?
Oh, I don't even. What was it called?
Jack Hanley.
Yeah, Jack Hanley, who was a cop. Yeah, because you remember he was like Detective Hanley, and that's when he would drive around in his car that was outfitted like a fucking cop car. That was his, like, shadow personality.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
Jack Hanley. Gay one.
Yeah.
That's a gay one right there.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, let's continue on with the theme of the news stories. More ladies in trouble. Now, this one involves a cult leader in New Mexico. The name of this gal, her name is Deborah Green.
She is impressive looking. I am loving this uniform, man.
Well, I'm sure that you are. She called herself the General, and you might say, well, that seems like an awfully militant name for a cult leader or a Christian cult leader. Well, the name of her Christian cult was, quote, Aggressive Christian Mission Training Corps, which is the most on the nose I've ever heard for a description of an aggressive Christian cult.
This shit's pretty, pretty intense. It's also the Aggressive Christianity Mission Training Corps, training the Aggressive Christianity Mission.
It doesn't roll. I will say it does not roll off the tongue.
Aggressive Christianity Missions Training Corps, abbreviated ACMTC, which is what they call themselves, also known as the Holy Tribal Nation, or Free Love Ministries, or the Life Force Team.
Okay, those are much better than ACMTC or Aggressive Christian Mission Training Corps.
It is.
They like sounding real official. They like it to be as intense as possible.
So Deborah Green, she was sentenced Wednesday in district court in Grants right after one of the victims gave emotional testimony about what was happening on this compound. So the victim said, emotionally, she broke me as a child to the point where I where I still today struggle with my own self-confidence, my self-esteem, and my sense of worth. So she actually got sentenced. So the victim asked District Court Judge James Sanchez to give the 71-year-old Green the maximum sentence of 108 years. So she is really... She's in it. This is going to be maybe the future for the dude of the NXIVM cult. Perhaps he's going to look at similar years behind bars as well.
Well, these guys were a little bit even more serious than the NXIVM cult, because the NXIVM cult was a little bit more about pleasing the leader. These are people that believe that they were creating a modern Christian army, and it seemed like they had, because they were known as generals, because her official title within the cult was General Green, and they also know we call each other back and forth. And it seems to be, it's a, like a Christian version of Scientology, but they were also armed.
Yes.
Where they had many concessions. Circles of membership. There was obviously many different ranks, and the children were raised in a children of God, like quote unquote free love society. And they also did not believe in medicine.
So you say 108 years. This woman just seems like she might have had a rough childhood or something. Well, children of God is the right comparison, because Green got 72 years. This is again Deborah Green. She got 72 years for 3 counts of child rape, 2 counts of kidnapping, and 1 count of child abuse. At the start of the trial, it was revealed Green was accused of convincing her daughter to take a newborn baby from Uganda in the 1990s. The child was brought to the compound where it was physically and sexually abused. This woman is obviously completely disgusting, and this is one of the most egregious cults I can think of when it comes to the sexual nature that's led by a woman. Is that unique?
I'll tell you what, man, again, big ups for the ladies getting in there. You got to take up that space in there. You can't let dudes be the ones who have to be the cult leaders, man. You got to get in there. You got to start to sisters are doing it for themselves,
but
man.
The only other cult leader that we covered was that one chick who has that compound out there that's just kind of witchy. It doesn't seem like there's any sexual abuse going on. That's a little different, isn't it?
It's much different, yeah.
There are other female cult leaders that we even talked about this, because we want to do more. Obviously, we love cult episodes. It's our favorite shit on the face of the planet, but because of the deep nature of it, how much shit is involved. But there are stuff like the woman Silvia Moraz Moreno, who was co-leader of a violent cult called La Santa Muerta. Called the Saint Death, seems to be they're involved in the cartels, and they do quite a bit of human sacrifices to appease their god of death to help protect their various drug dealings.
Actually, I believe Carolina covered that one on Escuela Sangre.
If you speak
Spanish, that shit is particularly fucking awful.
Yes,
it's really brutal.
And even if you don't speak Spanish, check out just lastpodcastnetwork.com, right?
Yeah.
And she has the scripts in English.
Yeah, all the scripts you can follow along. Yeah, so you can follow along, or if you're just interested in reading about the crimes of Latin America, there's a lot.
What's there to talk about?
There's a whole thing.
It's pretty nuts.
There's a bunch of other Chinese cult I eventually want to cover called Falun Gong that is supposed to be that uses dancers, much like Om Shinrikyo, to like kind of present how cool and fun their group is.
Huh,
it seems to be there's quite a bit of that actually. Within China, it seems to be there's a couple of female-run cults out of China, which is, I guess, good for them.
Yeah, I guess female-run cults just might not be necessarily an American thing, because it seems like around the world, you know, there are plenty. Because, Children of God, like a lot of the higher-ups, there were women that were definitely involved in the sexual abuse, specifically when you get around Little Ricky and all that type of
stuff,
which I don't really want to think about again. But.
And even Jonestown, we talked about how important the women were within the organizational structure of Jonestown, but it was a little bit more unofficial.
Which another interesting thing about this story is the location, is that it's in Gallup, New Mexico.
Yes.
That's right where the old Route 666 used to start.
Oh.
Yeah, they changed it in 2003, though.
To what?
491.
Come on.
2003. But Gallup is actually a really interesting place because it sits right in the middle of, like, 4 different Indian reservations.
Oh, okay.
Like, you know, like Navajo, Zuni, there's a whole lot of different, like, Indian reservations right there. So it's very interesting that they choose, like, specifically that place to run a weird Christian militant cult.
Well, perhaps the authorities weren't paying it as much attention as they would have if it was located elsewhere. Going back to Deborah Green, Judge Sanchez said about her victim, a weaker person would not have survived. That means you can continue on being strong. The abuse came to light last year when authorities raided the compound in Fence Lake near Gallup and found 11 children. Some of them were as young as 4 years old. All of them being held against their will. So this is it's a disturbing story. I don't think we have to put on our feminist caps for this one. I'm going to say she's a horrible person.
Beat her with a stick. Beat her with a stick, and we can say it.
Yeah. So those 11 kids have been taken into custody, and God, hopefully they can recover from it. Given the long sentence she was given, the DA's office is still deciding if it will take this case to trial. So she is going to be gone forever. But yeah, I mean, out of nowhere.
Yeah, snappy uniforms, though. That white uniform that she has is really snappy.
It's interesting.
This is what I'm saying. That's the one good thing about getting into a cult is you get to make your own uniforms and everybody gets to be part of a team that you're immediately in charge of.
Yeah, but you could also do that if you get into a dance club. Or like if you maybe, whatever. There's so many other ways to do it.
But is it the bite?
You just want the uniform.
Hi, guys. It's Carolina Hidalgo from Last Podcast Network. I co-host a weekly podcast called Movie Sign with the Mads with Frank Conniff and Trace Bellew, the original mad scientist from the hit cult TV show Mystery Science Theater 3000. That's right, TV's Frank and Dr. Clayton Forrester, along with myself, spend each week discussing and thoroughly dissecting a movie we've recently seen.
The premise of our show is very complicated. I hope you can pay attention. We come in once a week and talk about a movie. Okay, I hope you could keep up with that.
Past episodes included classics like Taxi Driver, The Godfather, and Sunset Boulevard, to our live show recordings of The Shining, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and Close Encounters of the Third Kind, to newer releases like The Shape of Water, Hereditary, Get Out, and Mandy.
Some we like, some we don't. We agree, we disagree. But in the end, it's all about movies and you, the viewer, and your suggestions. The viewer, no, it doesn't come through that way. It's on the radio. It's on a podcast. A podcast, and it's free.
There's no real continuity between the episodes, so click on the movie episode you'd like to hear about. Check us out on iTunes, SoundCloud, wherever you can find podcasts, or just look for us on lastpodcastnetwork.com under shows. Thanks, everyone, and enjoy the show.
We'll do this really quick because we're running out of time, but I just want to quickly say the good news story of the week. 3-year-old boy missing in freezing weather for 2 days because he said he was looked after by a bear.
Woo!
And he was
actually, you know what? I want to take a little bit of a lead on this news story because I got a news story for you guys to refute the bear information.
Wow. We're trying to bring Marcus one nice story.
Marcus story is wildly against the narrative of the story. And I don't know what it is about you. Like, is it about false narrative of bears? It's like, is it that kind of shit?
The story of a 3-year-old boy who said he survived 2 nights alone in the woods due to the assistance of a friendly bear should not encourage people to seek out their own relationships with bears.
Well, no kidding.
A leading earth sign expert has warned. Last week, rescuers in North Carolina found 3-year-old Casey Hathaway crying but safe, entangled in a patch of thorny bushes, having been missing in a wooded area in freezing conditions for 2 nights. Casey told police he survived due to the presence of a black bear, which kept him company.
It's absolutely nice. Why would the boy make it up? He's only three years old.
No, that's exactly
what
he
doesn't know what a bear is.
Have you spoken to a 3-year-old?
I speak to 3-year-olds every day.
Have you heard a 3-year-old and then you?
Yeah, they're having fun.
And then
the bear showed up.
And the bear came, and he brought me fruit. And then a rabbit came, and he brought me fruit.
Well, he was in a thorny bush. Who likes thorny bushes? Bears?
Yeah.
Of course. And I'm going to say to refute you, Mr. Marcus, Brianna Hathaway, this is the boy's aunt, she says he said he hung out with a bear for 2 days. And she wrote on Facebook, God sent him a friend to keep him safe. God is good. Miracles do happen.
That's why I don't like. I don't like fucking shoehorning her fucking evangelism into
God sent
bullshit.
The bear.
And to refute you, this seemingly remarkable tale of Jungle Book style interspecies friendship was likely a product of Casey's imagination. However, according to one veteran bear expert, said Chris Servine, a bear researcher at the University of Montana, "I've never known such a thing to happen. Bears don't do that." While bears aren't friendly with people, I don't want to say he's not telling the truth. He obviously thinks he's seen things, and maybe he's got a teddy bear at home, but I've seen no evidence anything like that has ever happened.
Oh my God,
I'm
going to
say it like this. Yeah, I feel like number one, he got paid. for that interview. I definitely think he's taking money. He's on the dole. He's making that fair money.
Yep.
And two, for some reason, he doesn't want to believe this because, you know, he's never been close to a bear.
That's right.
And he's always wanted to be, desperately so, wanted to be friends with a bear, could never bridge the gap because they all fucking know that he's the fucking man. He's a bear cop, so they can't fucking trust him. And three, I think a part of it is that he feels he needs to say something as a member of the bear science community in order to discourage people from doing it.
This kid is the future Jane Goodall for bears.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you really want to know,
bear whisperer.
If you want to know about the behaviors of bears and how bears react with humans and how difficult it is to really train a bear, you read this book called Dancing Bear. They're about dancing bears in Russia. Bears are quite the particular animals.
Well, I read a Facebook post. Quote, God sent him a friend to keep him safe. God is good. Miracles do happen. There it is.
Okay, though. But imagine the flip of this whole storyline. No bear, but it's he did meet somebody in the forest, and it's just a man in a dirty, furry uniform who just lives in the woods. Who's just like, hey, yeah, I'm a bear, spiritually.
Right.
And he's like bringing him honey and shit. And he's like, the bear man is a good man. Meanwhile, it's just a fucking drifter, escapee from a mental asylum.
But if he's being nice to the kid, yeah, that's fine with me. I don't care. It's like, what's the dude from Problem Child?
Yeah.
Christopher Lloyd's character.
No, that's Michael Richards in Problem Child.
Oh,
Christopher
whatever.
Lloyd was in Dennis the Menace.
Yeah, we're eating beans. We're having fun.
You're too just surprised he's not a pedophile character that I guess are a must for every rapscallion boy movie.
Well, maybe they edited that part out. I don't know, but Dennis was a menace. Good luck, my man. I don't think that's going to happen. Dennis will kick your butt.
Dennis is a fucking terrorist.
I know. Okay, well, I'm going to believe it. You know, that kid got a book published, and he said he went to heaven.
Burpo
got a book published.
Got a movie. Didn't a movie?
I think it was.
Yeah, I saw a trailer for this movie. It looks fucking awful. There are so many actors. Well, there's so many. There are like famous-ish actors. There's just so many paycheck performances where these guys are just like, all right, like the one of the dudes that was in Scrubs. Is
Braff?
No, the other guy.
The other guy.
Yeah.
There's
a lot of people like just looking for paychecks these days doing these shitty Christian films.
Well, I
hope that little kid got a fucking wake up call about how difficult it is to write a book. That's for certain.
Burpo. Well, yes, absolutely. And of course, that's going to be for profit. That whole story was for profit.
Yeah.
And if you want to watch how truly horrible the inside workings of the evangelical community, I rewatched, what was it called? Jesus. Through the Eyes of Tammy Faye. About Tammy Faye Baker. It's a documentary narrated by RuPaul. It came out in 2000, but what Jerry Falwell did to Jim Baker and Tammy Faye was brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting. Anyway, so check that out. Okay, lastly, my feel-good story, although it's not really a feel-good story, but I just didn't know it was possible. Police say a Connecticut woman charged with driving under the influence was drunk on vanilla extract. I guess that has a bunch of booze in it.
It is very alcoholic.
No idea.
Like Giada De Laurentiis? Is this someone from one of the fucking baking shows? Like Anne Burriell or some bullshit?
I just saw a Pioneer woman make her own vanilla extract using a bottle of cheap brandy and vanilla bean shells.
So this is 50-year-old Stephanie Warner Grice. She was sitting in her car at an intersection. Her eyes were closed. She fell asleep. It was 4:45 in the afternoon. Rough day. Officers say they found several bottles of pure vanilla extract inside the car. They said they detected an odor of vanilla on her breath and her speech was slurred. I just didn't realize that you could get that hammered off of vanilla extract. But
why is she drinking like she's Mrs. Claus? That's very strange.
I know. Well, that's kind of why I thought it was such a funny. It gets such a weird thing to just get hammered off of vanilla extract.
Do you remember when you were a kid, were you ever told that like snorting nutmeg was a substitute for cocaine?
We did it. I did it with my friends, just like the little challenge with like, I think I did salt also. It just hurts a lot.
Vanilla extract, 70 proof.
70 Whoa. Proof?
70 proof. A little bit more than like vodka. But that's the thing, though, is that by volume, it's much, much more expensive.
Right. So that's the interesting thing about this. Yeah.
But
Mrs.
maybe
Claus,
your body doesn't test for alcohol or something. Has this got this? Maybe she's on parole or some shit.
Now, I think she just needed a drink.
I don't know.
She's probably just an alcoholic.
I think it's just
there was vanilla extract around, and so she grabbed it and drank it.
I know. That's your theory. It's also my theory that this news story comes from the cops in Candyland. And yes, this is one of the things they see on a regular basis.
Oh, my God. Well, hey, if you're going to get drunk out there, guys, don't do it in your car. You can drink whatever you want.
No.
Well, there's a couple of things I'm going to say to not do. Rubbing alcohol is not good for you, man. I don't care how much you need to get it. If you're going to relapse, just get beers and then go back into treatment. I don't know what to say. Don't do the poison part of it. Don't drink Purell. You don't need to do it that way. If you're going to relapse, relapse in a fun way.
Or just take care of yourself. Don't do it behind no matter what you do. Don't be behind any heavy machinery or a car or a motorcycle or a tricycle or any kind of bike.
And I'll tell you what, because every single time I'm worried about if I can make it, I think about this inspirational quote from Sammy Hagar. You write me up for 125, poster my face, wanted dead or alive, take my license. All that jive. I can't drive 55.
Oh my goodness. All right.
I will not drive.
There was one dude I remember, an alcoholic, who used to do, he was like, yeah, the thing with rubbing alcohol, they don't let me have booze in the house, but I have that, and you can you filter it through white bread.
Yeah.
And then he would eat the white bread, I think. Anyway, it was disgusting. All right, everyone. Well, take care of yourselves. Thank y'all so much for listening to this show. We do have some announcements. It's general now. For our live shows.
Yes, it is.
So get out there, check out our live shows.
319 in Nashville. We got 320 in Cincinnati.
All right.
322 in Cleveland. 323 in good old-fashioned Pittsburgh. Gonna go and see the fam and get wild.
I cannot wait. I love those cities. It'll be nice to see the Midwest.
I've never been to Cincinnati.
I have never been to Cincinnati either. Yeah. I know they got the chili, and I'm going to say it's a little controversial, but I'm going to get a chili dog.
You're going to get a chili dog,
Because I'm rowing. No weight, but I'm wearing plastic bags, and I'm rowing. I'm sweating.
It's okay for you to have some carbs. It's good for you to have some carbs.
Yeah, no,
I could sit and do a tradition, because traditionally Cincinnati chili, I believe, is served over spaghetti.
Yes. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
So we could sit and have a plate of that in an attempt to do a show. Sure. Yeah. We've done this before. Remember, we got the barbecue in Kansas City, and then we did a show like, hey, everybody.
Yes.
How's everybody? Feeling nice.
Yep, it was great. Yeah. So check out our Patreon. Thank you all so much for giving to that. This week, Henry and I interviewed Detective Mike Proctor. He's a former homicide detective. He wrote the book on stalking, not a how to stop it.
Yeah.
So yes, check that out. Thank you all so much. And I'm just going to say this. Can't wait to see you on the road, and hail yourselves.
Well, hey, live like this is it, man, because it is. Love like... You got a pocket full of condoms and a shoes full of lube, and I want you to laugh like you're a man on the way to the electric chair.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, right? He finally got me! He finally got me!
What was Ted Bundy's last words? Were like, sorry for all the trouble. Something
sorry
like that.
About what that, all that. So.
Yeah, it was something ridiculous.
Totally spaced.
Did they talk about the James Dobson interview?
Yes, they talk about him blaming it on pornography and James Dobson. Speaking of evangelicals, watch the Tammy Faye doc and watch the Bundy doc. And they are such scumbags. They somehow blamed women for just having boobs still.
Yes.
It came all around to pornography being the problem.
Oh, yes.
All right, hail yourselves.
Hail me. Pornography is never the problem. Pornography is the solution.
Yeah, again, if pornography was the problem, then we would not have survived the 70s.
Literally, all of us would be in jail right now if pornography was a problem. I have to have pornography when we're on the road. It's nice, and they are actually humans that make it, and they're actually very nice people for the most part.
Very nice, yeah.
Thank you for being here, Marcus.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Marcus.
It was fun to talk about Bundy and all the other stuff. The bear story isn't real.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.